Last session, huh? Did you guys have a good CBC? So welcome to our session on Beer Brings People Together, how hip-hop and craft breweries are bridging the cultural divides. And we have some really fantastic panelists here today. And I wanted to just first let you know that Lennox and his team are doing some filming. And they do some really cool work putting some of these stories together. If we have some release forms here, some waivers that we'll pass around, that we, if you wouldn't mind just signing those, just in case we catch a glimpse of your face in the video, then we feel cool about that. Everything's legit. And if there's, for some reason, you don't want to even have, like, your chin or something in there, potentially your face, you want to make sure you sit, like, kind of back in that corner. And then vice versa, if you want to be on film, and you then you should come out of that corner and fill in some of these seats up front here. Okay. So that's some of our housekeeping. Otherwise, the other housekeeping thing I want to let you know about is on your apps, the CBC app, you have on the session, you have a feedback link there, and we'd love to hear your feedback on how the session went. If you want more of this in the future, if you think there are ways that it can be better, we on the selection committee, we actually read all of your reviews and look through all of those reviews as we plan for next year. So we'll be looking at those in the next couple of months, and we really appreciate your feedback, because of course this is for you. We want to make sure it's useful. Okay. So I'm going to get started. My name is Katie Wallace. I'm the Assistant Director of Sustainability at New Belgium Brewing in Colorado. I also co-chair the Sustainability Committee for the Brewers Association, a lot of fun work we do there on the mostly environmental, tiny bit of social elements of it. We've got Jason Spaulding, cover model of the New Brewer magazine from Brewery Vivant. And then we have Lennox Mercedes over here from High Gravity Hip Hop. And Lennox is throwing hip hop parties and craft breweries and seeing what kind of new things we can cook up in that space. So each of us are going to roll through a few slides here and hang out with you a little bit. And we'll have some time for questions at the end. So what's going on in the world today? How many people had, like, a super awkward situation at, like, Thanksgiving or Christmas with family, like, post-election kind of weirdness? And, of course, you know, there's a lot of, I did for sure. But, you know, we all still love each other because we had beers together. But there's a lot of issues going on across the world today. This is a study put out by Pew Research Center, showing the ideological divides over time in the United States. So this was even taken in 2014. I would be really interested to see what that looks like in 2016, 2017, because we can kind of start to feel ourselves, you know, these values that we have as American citizens really starting to, we're feeling some of those divides today. And actually, in D.C., for example, that, like, hate crimes are up 66% from 2015 to 2016. So, you know, a lot, we don't have to harsh that. That's all the Debbie Downer stuff for the moment. But then, you know, just want to, you know, this is really about what role our breweries are playing, and we as people who bring communities together, and what we can do to help heal that. Part of the reason that people have said that one of the reasons they've explained why this is happening is because social media, the algorithms in Facebook and other apps are really showing you more of what you like, and they're hiding from you more of what you don't like. And so we're only really seeing some of the information and the news sources and the opinions and stories of people that are like us. And so we're not getting that exposure to other ideas, and so therefore the tolerance for other types of ideas has been declining over time. And so what can we do to help solve that? Did you guys see DeFazio in the general session? And he ended with craft brewers, please help us save our country. Because beer is bringing people together, and this is one of the few bipartisan caucuses that is still really alive and functioning well within the House, and so the Small Brewers Caucus. And so definitely seeing how beer bridges the political aisles and generally brings people together. So In our tap rooms, how many people in this room have a tap room, tasting room? You're seeing all kinds of people hang out every day, right? And I'm sure you yourself have met new friends and neighbors and people you might not otherwise have a chance to cross paths with when you're coming together over a beer. Because beer and togetherness, this creates a sense of belonging, which some psychologists, researchers will say that belonging is as important to us as food and water and shelter. When we don't have that, our mental, our physical constitutions start to deteriorate and then create, once we come into more of a fight or flight space, then we're less likely to get along. But a sense of belonging, it signals a lot of safety to us, and we get to use our more compassionate parts of our brains that are also smarter. They hold better perspectives. They can understand complexity better. And beer and community, we really help to, we're social glue, right? And people join together in our tap rooms and from there feel a sense of belonging. And when we have that type of belonging, then we're able to really start to trust our neighbors instead of saying, you know, here's an idea that all people of a certain political party or something are really big jerks, you know, but you start to realize that that's not true when you start having beers with them and realizing that they have, you know, human values just like you do and have just different flavors of that. We start to grow our tolerance and acceptance for one another. Peter Block is the author of this quote. He has some really cool articles and books on community and togetherness. We also have the ability to join people together outside of our tap rooms. How many of you sponsor festivals or hold your own festival? Another way where people are gathering outside the brewing space, this is a picture from the Tour de Fat that New Belgium puts on every year across the country. And has anyone ever worn a dress at the Tour de Fat? I told so my parents came out for a Tour de Fat, and my dad, you know, I was like, you guys, we can be lions and tigers and bears, oh my, but it'll only be funny if dad, you're wearing a dress and you're Dorothy and you say, oh my. And so he said, okay, only if there are no pictures, and then ended up being in the Denver Post. So, but, you know, the Tour de Fat is one of those things that I think, you know, living in Fort Collins, Colorado, you get 25,000 people on bicycles in all these weirdo costumes. I told my dad if he wasn't wearing either bikini bottoms or a dress that he would probably look weird and not fit in. And I'd rather him wear a dress. But so anyway, so then, you know, Fort Collins, 25,000 people on bikes and then drinking beer and having a good time together. And these are the same people. I meet my neighbors this way. And I meet people that I think that we are really different, but when we're hanging out in tutus, we're really similar. And so so a lot of opportunities that we have to throw parties, to bring people together, and also maybe funnel a lot of that towards a good cause. Over the lifetime of Tour de Fat, we've raised over $4.5 million. It's all gone to local nonprofits in the cities where the Tour de Fat happens, and that's helped to build more bike trails and create better bicycling access. And bikes, again, another moment where you get to wave at your neighbor instead of, you know, being more isolated in your car. So so just a quick introduction to all of that. There are ways, too, that we've seen breweries getting involved in the political space. Has anyone seen this beer or tried that? North Carolina. So 43 breweries got together in response to the HB2 bill in North Carolina about bathroom discrimination and created the Golden Rule Saison that Mystery Brewing hosted, and you know, it's the Don't Be Mean to People beer. And this is a way for us to just kind of remind each other to care for one another regardless of how we differ from each other along the way. So so framing that, we're going to dive into our speakers here. And to kick that off, this is Jeff Allworth. Maybe you've read the Beer Bible. Check that out. He wanted to be one of our speakers today but couldn't make it. He draws a really good conclusion and references a lot of data that shows when a brewery is in a community that it actually improves the overall economic vitality and the vibrancy of that community when you have a tap room and a gathering space there. And I know Jason Spalding, co-founder of Brewery Vivant, also has a background in economic development, and he's going to dive into Brewery Vivant's work in this space and beyond.
Awesome. Okay, so in between, I was also part of a brewery called New Holland Brewery. In between that time, I did economic development which was kind of a odd little sidestep, but it came in handy in a lot of ways going forward. So it's been kind of fun. But our brewery is in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we have a big sustainability focus. So my wife and I work together. We always kind of talk about, she's in charge of our people and planet, and I'm in charge of our product and profit. That's kind of how we divide things up. How we talk about it, kind of joke about it, is I like to make money, she likes to give it away. That's kind of how we do that. So on the economic development side, it's kind of interesting. When we started our brewery, we were in what was kind of called the last kind of black eye in our neighborhood. So it was a big building. It was a funeral home. It had been empty for about 5 to 6 years. I wish I would have got a better picture, but it looked awful. Everyone in the neighborhood walked by. Everyone's worried about it, getting burned down or something like that. So this is kind of a before and after shot. It looked a lot worse. I wish I had a worse picture, but it's kind of interesting. So, in the paper, they kind of talked about the same kind of thing. It was a kind of a black hole in the neighborhood, and they tried other projects there, but nothing really worked. And then finally, our brewery was big enough to make the whole thing go forward. But it's really, I think, interesting, as we are growing and we're looking at things, breweries really are talked about with among economic developers as a way, a purposeful tool to develop a neighborhood. Because it is a gathering place, it brings people together. They're actually trying to target breweries to do that. So here's one more kind of before and after shot. And just kind of interesting from, being in that kind of hiatus in a brewery and actually hearing, going to economic development, which are conferences which are really, really dry, but have them bring up breweries, and that perks my ears up. And just kind of interesting opportunity everyone should be aware of. If you're looking at second location, first location, things like that, cities are really, may have incentives, may have things like that to try to draw that in because it, we fit in warehouse buildings, we fit in districts that, some projects may not work, but a brewery often does, so it's kind of fun. So we have a big effort in our community side, and it's kind of interesting. We look at how can we be good neighbors? So when we first announced that we're going to put our brewery in this building, we had people show up at our city meetings and oppose it. They're worried about this, that, and the other thing, and we kind of talk about how we have this community approach, and I think people really put people's worries aside, and we did some things where that people didn't expect. So we had this elementary school that's literally like right across the street from our brewery. So they had a new principal that started the same year that we opened our brewery, and they were literally the worst performing school district in our community in Grand Rapids. But this principal really did some great work, and in 6 years she really turned it around, and now it's one of the stories that Grand Rapids Public Schools talks about. And through that, she had a community outreach, and we were wanting to be involved, and some other people wanted to be involved. So we did some things with them to kind of help them out. She let us know some of the budgetary issues that they face. And it's kind of, I don't know if every school is like this, but they don't have enough money to buy Kleenex for their students because it's not in the budget, and pencils, and it's like, wow, really? So we started finding ways we could team up with them. And then we did some things. We had a learning garden that we started on the property. So that's Mike Miller. We called him Miller Time. He went over and worked with the kids. We sent our chef over to do some classes. But it's kind of a neat way. And I'm just trying to think creatively as you guys are out there. What are ways you can connect with people in your community and really get involved? And this is one of the projects we have that people don't always think a brewery and an elementary school. How's that gonna how's that, should that even go together? But, we've kind of found a way to make it work, and it's really been fun. And on our five-year anniversary for our brewery, we kind of leaned on some of our big suppliers, and we didn't really have to lean that hard, but we had a goal to raise $20,000 to buy Chromebooks for the school, just to try to keep them on the cutting edge of technology and things like that. And we had a lot of people come, like our food vendor. We're a big restaurant. We had our big food vendor and some of our wholesalers kick in. And it was kind of fun because we were able to bring that forward. And then when we tour the school and see those kids using that stuff, it's pretty awesome. But, you know, just be aware how you can do those things in your community. And it's made a big difference for us. And we have a really, really good reputation as a result of that. And one other thing I think is kind of an opportunity. We talked about, you know, your brewery, especially at the tasting room, does bring people together. But sometimes you still don't get to meet people. So one of the things that we wanted to do, and just throwing some ideas out here, we put these big, long, you know, Bavarian tables together, and we call them community tables. Because, you know, you come in, you sit down, you have a couple beers, and next thing you know it, you're actually talking to that person next to you. So that was the idea from the get-go. Like, we noticed it in our European travels that, you know, I had a great conversation with this really old German dude that I'll never see again, but, you know, that's what I remember. We had a great time, and we have a lot of people come back and talk to us about that. But it's funny, you know, especially Americans, we have booths on the outsides. Boom. Come in, right to the booths. And then when there's no booths left, then they are forced to sit at these big, long tables. And then when they come back like a second, third time, they actually want to sit at those tables because it's a lot of fun. So just an idea, you know, that we had how we can keep people talking and meeting and, you know, kind of bridging that divide. And then, of course, you know, there's people happy drinking, and now they're all best friends. And then one of the other things we do, we have, you know, a lot of people have mug clubs. We're kind of, you know, Belgian influenced, so we have a monk club. But also, you know, we have this club of 600 people that come and drink their beer and leave. But a lot of times they don't really get to meet each other either. And this is a group of really cool people. So sometimes we have social events and we find ways to kind of mix it up a little bit just to kind of get these people to get to talk to each other. You know, even when you're within the same building, sometimes you don't get to meet people, and just trying to find ways to do that, and beer is a really good way to bridge that gap. And then also, you know, being involved in the community, you know, this is something that my wife, Chris, really, really drives. She's on a lot of committees. She's chair of Local First, which is a how to drive business locally. But really taking that time, you know, we're all running our businesses. It's difficult. It's, you know, we don't feel like we have a lot of extra time. But these things really make a big difference. And, you know, being the profit side of our business, you know, I also see how these things come return to our business as well. People are very, very grateful for the time we have. A lot of times we will, working with nonprofits, we'll host people at our building, we'll do different events and things like that. We'll sometimes, you know, if you have nonprofits in your neighborhood, they're always looking for event space. We're not open for lunch, so a lot of times, or not a lot of times, but occasionally, we'll open up our space for a nonprofit, and they're always very, very grateful for that. And then also, I think, you know, beyond, you know, having the owners do that, if you can encourage, if you have key people, encourage them to sit on neighborhood committees and things like that. So it's not just the owners, but if you can get all your people involved, that's been great for us. And then also, one of the things we do that kind of brings people together too is we have volunteer, like paid volunteer hours that we pay people. We also, so if you're hourly, you can get 8 hours of paid volunteer time, whether it's our event that we organize or if it's something you just want to do. And salary people, we encourage 16 hours. And then we have a goal of 250 hours for the company. So we have about 60 employees. So it's about 4 hours per employee is our goal for overall volunteer time. And we'll organize events, but also encourage people to do that. But then we also you know, get involved with other people in the community when we do this. We'll invite our monk club members and good patrons of ours to come join us as well. And that kind of builds that whole community part too. And then, you know, these are just different things that we do. And people end up having a lot of fun. And when you work together, it really brings that bond together really well too. And then this last one's like we plant trees, and we have some people just from the neighborhood. The woman on the left there, Dottie, she comes to all our things and then talks about us all around town. It kind of spreads that word for us that we're involved, and you know, and that goes a long way, is that word of mouth. And then one other thing that we do with these events too is we'll have socials afterwards. We'll, you know, feed people, you know, nothing crazy. Maybe we'll cook out some brats and have a beer. But we think that's a big part of it too, kind of have that social aspect to it to really, you know, bring that bonding part together. So just some ideas. That's how we do. That's how we operate. What else do I have here? All right. Oh, okay. So how many breweries have been, do you get approached for charitable donations, things like that? Does everyone raise your hand? Yeah. For us, we weren't even open yet. You know, we opened in like December 2010. I'm getting requests in like November. You know, can we please donate such and such? I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, we're not even, I haven't earned a dollar yet. I put everything I own in this, and, you know, people are already wanting things from us. But if you haven't been approached, you will. And also, I think if you have some foresight, and some planning. My wife manages this whole thing, but we have criteria. This is what we're choosing to donate to, because you will get asked from everyone. And my problem is I can't say no. I think every good cause is worthy, but you can't do everything. So we put some criteria together. These are the things that we want to focus on. We put it on our website. When people ask, we try to direct people to that to try to kind of limit those things and also try to direct our efforts better. But I think one of the big opportunities, especially if there's startup breweries and things like that, where you know you don't really have a lot of cash to donate, product in kind is really nice. And then we also do these fundraisers. So we'll pick a charity, and each month on like a Monday that's kind of slow, we'll do a portion of sales to that organization, and then they pack the place on a night that would be normally slow. So it's kind of a win-win, but choosing who that is, you know, that needs to be kind of fit your overall goals or who you want to donate to, what causes you want to support, and things like that. And then one other idea that we have that's worked really, really well for us is, you know, we do this in-kind donation. So we've kind of shifted, like we have a 1% of gross sales that we donate to charities. And about 2/3 of that's cash, about 1/3 of that's in kind. But one of the things we're trying to do is with the in-kind stuff is really get our beer in front of people. And, you know, little things like, you know, especially if you're doing keg beer, people just show up, drink beer, they don't really know what they're doing. But, you know, also providing cups, which the charities are very grateful for because now they don't have to buy cups and things like that. But also gets your branding in front of people as well. And it kind of builds that goodwill. But just a couple things to keep in mind. What else? Oh, all right. That was it for me. So I'm going to turn it over, and we'll have time for questions after. Cool.
Good afternoon, everyone. How y'all doing? Y'all still feeling all right? Okay. I see some people nodding. I ain't going to mention the phones. As was mentioned, my name is Lennox Mercedes, and I love craft beer and I love hip hop, and I found a way to kind of bring them together and create something that ended up being very unique. I just knew there were hip hop beer festivals everywhere, and you know, but it turned out it wasn't. So very pleased and honored to be able to be here today. I appreciate, you know, the invite and everything from Katie. And so I'm going to start off with a brief video just to kind of show y'all some highlights from the way we put events together. We do everything from standalone festivals, events at breweries. We have a sneaker ball that's really cool that you'll see in the video as well. And then some of the tastings we do with some folks out in the world. So let me attempt to hit play. Let me make sure the sound is connected. And yeah.
think of this as this is a game changer. I mean, like, when it's said and done, it's going to be two eras: before high gravity hip hop and after high gravity hip hop.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Lennox Mercedes, your host and founder of High Gravity Hip Hop. We're going to grab some folks off the street and get them excited about craft beer and see what they can tell us about their craft beer knowledge.
Do you drink beer?
Yes.
No.
So what's your favorite beer right now?
Coors Light.
Like Guinness a lot.
And vodka, tequila.
Okay, so a little more on the harder side, less beer.
So how did you get into craft beer? That you told me about craft beer, you know, I was telling that story, like, my man put me on a craft beer and high gravity, I was born at the book house and all that.
Do you know what craft beer is?
No.
Craft?
No.
Craft, what's it?
I do.
Okay, tell us what craft beer is.
Craft beer is usually
You want some more of that?
This stuff is like sipping style, right. Pounding stuff.
Right.
We're gonna do this 420.
Okay. People have spoken, Sweetwater 420.
Oh my gosh, one of my really good friends in LA took me one night. We were just hanging out. She's like, you gotta try this beer. Craft beer. I'd had other beers, Heineken, but I'm like, now she's like, Chimay.
Dude, I was like, what's the best beer up here? Because I don't really want to drink some. Because they didn't have any crappy beer. So they gave me a course and it blew my mind. I was like, I'm stuck. I love it. I'm all in.
May have converted me into a beer drinker. Many have tried, many have failed, but you guys have done the job.
This is High Gravity Hip Hop. This is what we do.
Cool. Hold on. All right, so I'm going to put on a little background music because it's only right. Y'all with me? All right. Last session. You're going to make it. All right, I hope that works. There we go. Nice little talking music.
So, this picture is actually from a private beer festival that I gave away at a brewery event, and it was a great promotion, and it worked really well. And we used a very ethical way of choosing the winner. We picked the person who bought the most tickets, and they won. So, worked out. So, and I'm actually really good friends with the gentleman in the glasses who I'm with. We became actually really, really great buddies after that, and we helped him produce this. So, just to give you a little bit of background on myself, I come from the world of academia. I worked at Morehouse College for 5 years as the assistant director of housing and information systems. So I'm all about getting out, tangibly making things happen, as well as relying on data and information to kind of help make decisions. So, as I mentioned in the video, it might have been hard to hear certain parts, but I got into craft beer while I was there with a coworker who introduced me. And next thing you know, we were going to beer festivals and just getting into it. And I was like, man, this could be really, really something if we added some features. I spent the time at Morehouse on the homecoming committee, so I learned how to do these large scale events. For 10,000 people at a tailgate and 5,000 people at a concert or a step show and whatnot. So I took those skills and a lot of the teams that I worked with at the school and just brought them over and we created this beer festival. I enlisted all these mentors and veterans, and it was a really good experience. And so I'm originally from New York, born and raised. I've been in Atlanta since 03. And I had the privilege of growing up during the golden era and the 90s. I was 10 years old in 86, so that put me, you know, around Run DMC and all these guys in Queens. And then the 90s, I was in high school for the early part of the 90s and then college for the later part. So it's such a sweet spot, you know, musically to be in. And I know everyone who is in that same sweet spot with me will agree that it's just a fantastic, just, I mean, I could go all day, right? So what we do is we help breweries design marketing campaigns to reach new audiences, right? So the idea is that, and this is actually actual feedback I got from a brewmaster. He said, I know these markets exist. I am all for it. I love everything about it, but I want to do it in an authentic way. And I was like, huh, okay. You know, I didn't expect that response, but that was real to me. So it was important for me to continue developing that in a way that respected the beer and respected the audience. So this is an image. I thought it was a funny image. Craft beer and hip-hop internationally don't really have a face, right? Internationally, beer is celebrated on every continent as well as hip-hop. So everyone embraces these things around the world. I think beer is the most popular drink on earth, except for like Coke and coffee or something like that. So I don't know, somebody fact check me. But the idea is that internationally, this is something that I believe will be welcomed. Everyone we spoke to at different beer festivals already loved hip-hop, so it was a very easy kind of connection to make. So then when I started digging, finding data around millennials, and millennials really love 90s hip-hop, it turns out. So that was like an interesting fact to learn. So the idea is you want to do it right, right? And having some conversations last night, hanging out, and Pepsi came up, right? It's so easy to do it wrong, you know, and kind of create these little faux pas that offend people. When I actually saw the commercial for Pepsi, I really didn't think it was that bad. I was like, I mean, they're trying, you know, they're trying to do something positive, but, you know, I can see how some people may view it differently based on the context of the times, right? So you have to kind of be aware of what's going on around you and the context of what people are feeling at the time. And a lot of times it's just timing, and we all know that lesson, right? Just in life, sometimes it's the timing part of it that's the most important piece. So I bring new craft beer drinkers, right? So, but I can make it attractive to them because there's so many beer styles. So I've discovered that cider is a fantastic way to get women introduced to craft beer. And I learned that brothers like stout. We like a lot of stout. I think that's maybe part of Guinness's success over the years, you know, being a very popular brand in the community. So the idea is that you can gain access to these new drinkers with some experiential type of marketing, right? It's not enough to just play some music or do a theme, right, around a certain genre or what have you. You want to include the people from your community that are the thought leaders in the areas and have the right people in the room. That's the biggest part of what I do, is having the right people in the room. It's not just everybody who likes hip-hop and everybody who likes craft beer that comes to my events. And we filter using different, you know, mechanics of how we organize ourselves. So this young man is actually one of my former students, Kwame Morris, who's actually Stevie Wonder's youngest son, and he was one of my students while I was at Morehouse. So he actually tended bar for me and hung out, and he's just a really fantastic kid. And these are the types of people that I've had the opportunity to meet in Atlanta. Atlanta's a very small city, and if you can build a good reputation for yourself, you can really, really gain access to a lot of really cool people. So this was an event. This was the same event, actually, at JWT. Anyone ever heard of JWT? J. Walter Thompson? It's a big ad agency. They do, like, Jiffy Lube and the Marine Corps and stuff like that. So they invited us up and we did a mini beer fest with them in their offices at the Ritz-Carlton in Atlanta. They had this beautiful two-floor office. They had this bar that like lights up, overlooks the city. It's phenomenal. So I got to invite DJ Red Alert, who was a legendary DJ who broke people like Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul and people back in the day. He's been mentioned in so many songs and stuff like that. Raise your hand if you know Red Alert. You guys know DJ Red Alert? So, like, Be Still. You know what I'm saying? When I met him, I was like, man. And when he agreed to come, I was like, for real? Like, please don't just tell me you're coming and you're not going to come. So he made it through. And on the left, this gentleman is Perry Fair. He was the president of JWT at the time, and he is now the VP of brand creative for Beats by Dre. So guess who I'm going to call next week, right? So we became really cool friends. And the gentleman on the right is Mr. Lotena Nwowu, and we just call him Lo. And he is also a creative director. I think he's at Ogilvy now. So this is what I mean when I say having the right people in the room. You know, you have these kind of influencers in all of your markets. Wherever you're at, there's a creative core of people who do either hand-to-hand promotions, they put together shows, they help all these different agencies activate when they come to town. You know, the big agencies always connect with the local guys, and there's a community of those people wherever your brewery is, and I would suggest tapping into that and connecting with them. So, finally, let's go to the next slide. So another thing I noticed was that sometimes we forget the ladies, you know, to be honest. And I can't never forget the ladies because they're beautiful, right? So this was at Red Brick Brewery in Atlanta, the oldest brewery in Georgia. And this was actually a Latin night we did. I brought in a salsa instructor, and he brought a lot of his class, you know, his class. And these lovely ladies had a great time drinking beer and dancing salsa all night. So that was really neat. And what I learned was that 60 to 70% of my ticket purchasers were females. And as y'all know, women drive the household purchasing. So when they're walking down the aisle of the supermarket, they're making selections as well. So you got to keep that in mind, and I know you do. So mixing up the genres is something that I found important as well. So R&B, salsa, merengue, reggae, you can almost, you know, apply this to just about any genre. So never forget the ladies. Now, one of the things that I want to emphasize is that although we have like this kind of the hidden mission of being able to heal a lot of the kind of the divides that exist in the world today, and I can say that in this room because we have very special folks in this room, but it's not something that we deliver publicly just, you know, to our general audience, because it's just such a sensitive area and topics, and, you know, I don't want anybody to get triggered, you know what I'm saying, and have a bad day. I don't want to have a bad day either. So what we do is we just put people in the room and let them enjoy each other. We don't try to program any kind of topics or conversations. We just let it happen, you know, just let people talk about whatever the heck they want. So the goal would be that the next time someone maybe saw something on the news or read something, they might say, you know what, I don't know about that, because I was at this thing the other day and I was hanging out with some folks and I don't know if I agree with that. You know, that's kind of like, that would be like the greatest thing for me, you know, just to kind of help people shift their thinking. And because you guys are the creators of this wonderful, wonderful liquid, you have the great opportunity to leverage that to do even more incredible things. I think the craft beer community has done a lot of great work. The work that Katie and Jason mentioned, this is phenomenal stuff. And I think that there's a lot more that can be done. There's a lot more that can be done. You guys really have a lot of power and have the ability to kind of really make some cool changes in the world. So wanted to give you kudos for that. And, you know, I love drinking the beer. So, as a side note. let's go to the next slide here. So, I think that's a cool picture because it's just funny. That's actually the gentleman you heard speaking earlier. That is Dres the Beatnik. He is, if you look up Human Beatbox, his picture comes up. It's kind of cool. He's one of the best hip-hop hosts in Atlanta, and he's hosted several festivals for me. And that audio in the video was from a podcast we did leading up to our very first event. So, and on the right, that is Miss Katia Blunt, who has been pouring for me for years. And she's also the assistant principal of one of the most elite private schools in Atlanta. So again, who is in the room and who's involved is critical. Our goals include building content, podcast, TV show. The dream would be to have an international beer fest concert tour, right? Let's take these 90s guys and go on the road and do like really cool stuff. You know what I mean? Like all over. And just take it to all the continents, because guess what? They already love beer. They already love hip-hop. Just packaging it in a way, you know, that makes it a little more fun and putting it together, I think, will be really cool. We have designs for a mixtape series, merchandise, all of that, collaboration beers, etc. So, again, it's a phenomenal opportunity for you guys to do some really special things. And I think I'm going to leave it there. All right? Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Lennon. Super cool to hear Jason's stories, what they're up to at Brewery Vivant, revitalizing the community, what Lennox is doing, bridging the divide. What else is going on out there? If anyone wants to ask questions of the panelists or share your own story, please come up to the mic.
Hey, so I am from a brewery in Austin, Texas, and affordability and gentrification are two really big issues for our city. So there are a lot of breweries opening up in like formerly not so nice neighborhoods that are driving up the rent prices and just kind of pissing people off. So I wanted to hear y'all's thoughts on that. Thanks.
Yeah, that's really the same with our brewery as well. And that's something we don't have great answers for, but we're definitely trying to reach out and try to find ways to make those connections. And I think a lot of that, just that community involvement where we're sitting on boards and just have that awareness where we're trying to invite, groups of different people to come all to the same table. And then, you know, we've had some ideas brought up on, ways that, the Latino community, you know, how they might like to see some of our, different type styles of beer, different types of events. And we're trying to listen. So there's definitely not a slam dunk solution, but I think it's just that building relationships, getting in the same room, having conversations. But I think that's right on the money. I mean, a lot of these opportunities for development, you need to have that awareness that, when a change comes, everyone reacts to that change differently. And we want it to end in a really positive way. So I think, just try to be as sensitive as you can and try to get the people that want to listen to come to the table, and it might take a little time.
I think in craft beer, one of the things that we struggle with is our the diversity of our applicants. So when we moved into North Carolina, for example, it's a more diverse community, socioeconomically and otherwise, than where we are in Fort Collins, Colorado. And we have, I think with our philosophy with that is that you want to revitalize the community and restore some of the spaces there, but you want to make sure you bring the whole community with you as you do that. And so we didn't actually get a great, diverse pool of candidates when we did our hiring, and so we've since worked with an organization that's doing job readiness for people in the community to try, if you don't know that a posting is happening because you don't have internet, then that is a hindrance towards actually applying for some of these jobs and bringing the whole community with you. So how do you get on job boards that don't require someone to have internet or a computer? And how do you your philanthropy program help to invest in job readiness and bringing the entire community with you as you grow and revitalize that space? Another thing that was recommended, is anyone a B Corp in here? So a few of you there, you may know that B Corp stands for Benefit Corporation, certification for businesses that are working to bring benefit to coworkers, communities, and the environment. And they have a big diversity and inclusion challenge this year that's really about bringing everyone with us when we work towards progress. And listen to a really wonderful talk and by some of the members, and they were saying that, you know, if you walk into a chamber of commerce for, you know, in some communities, unfortunately, this is a reality, but like color of skin and socioeconomic status are correlated in some areas. And so that's a huge issue that we need to fix systemically in our country. And so a lot of people won't come and apply for jobs because they don't see people of their color, someone that looks like them, at this place. And she said, don't just like hope that they apply, because there are some real reasons that they're not. And sometimes it's because that company has chosen consciously to not hire any people of color. And so so go to their chambers, go to the Chamber of Commerce, go to Hispanic professional associations, African American professional associations, and let people know that you're there because you want to integrate with the community. And just by showing up and being present in that space, that you start to people, you know, get a green light to come and apply for some of your jobs as well. So those are just some of the things that we've, you know, been hearing about recently as we're trying to approach that. But I do think that we do want to be conscious about bringing the entire community along with us as we revitalize these communities.
I'll just add something. Because the reality is that gentrification is coming to a lot of communities, and the truth is that the people who currently live in those communities will not be able to afford to stay. So there is not much we can do about that. There's an old saying, you know, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. And it's the unfortunate reality. But I think that you again have the opportunity to activate programs like have been mentioned to alleviate some of that. But the people who get moved out, they're not, you know what I mean? Like, they're not going to feel better because you did a program somewhere. You know, the best we can do is say, okay, we can't help these folks here, but maybe we can help, you know, the school and the community, or do something, you know, where we can help. But certain people are just going to be, it's just the reality that they're not going to be happy. You know, it's just the truth. So, but you can do other things to help alleviate that. So to kind of answer the question, it's just a tough spot, you know, it's a tough spot, but you can do some things to kind of at least make sure that your brand is viewed as a positive force.
And if the woman who asked that question, if you have any ideas of what you're seeing or you guys are doing at your brewery, I think that would be helpful for the room as well, if you want to come up. In the meantime.
Nothing like putting someone on the spot.
Oh, sorry. Well, I mean, it's something you're paying attention to, right? So it's something you're thinking about, and just love to deepen that conversation.
Well, we're one of the oldest breweries in the Austin area, so it hasn't been as big of an issue for us. But there are some that are literally, like, buying out the neighborhood convenience store and then making it this brewery with a bunch of white people. And it's just, like, it's obvious, and it's really noticeable. And I don't know. I mean, all of Austin is just getting way whiter than it's ever been, and it's forcing minorities to the outskirts and things like that. But now there are even breweries popping up in the outskirts of town, and that's pushing it out even further. So it just looks like there isn't really an end in sight, and I'm looking for some kind of, like, I don't know, a compromise so that people don't feel so alienated from the whiteness of Austin craft beer, you know? So, yeah.
yeah, certainly a really, I think a really important thing to be mindful of. And maybe, hopefully next year we'll have a panel of people here who have been thinking about that as a challenge to the room and come back and share some of the stories that we, you know, have worked on over the last year, because it's certainly an important issue.
So I come from a state where a lot of people use nonprofits to pull one-day event permits, and that's how they're kind of allowed to have beer festivals and do all of that. I'd be curious to know kind of what your transparency is about raising money for these types of organizations, because a lot of times people will say this is a fundraiser for X, Y, or Z, but you're not actually really sure how much of your ticket price really covers it, and that's just kind of what I've noticed in California.
I don't know, we just try to be, I mean, there's a never-ending amount of events that come up, and we've definitely seen, you know, we just try to pay attention. You know, we've seen some events that we don't do anymore, that it's someone, you know, pulling a one-day license every week, and where's that money really going? So we just try to find the genuine people, and if it's, you know, we try to, you know, for us, it's, the more local it is, the better. And if we have, we try to get to know people, and when we get involved with things like that. But it's hard if you have a big footprint for distribution to know where that's really going. But we just try to vet that out. And, you know, I think of our giving, I think, you know, 50% of it we try to make in our immediate neighborhood, and that helps a lot. And then a lot of times we'll maybe... you know, do like check exchanges where they buy the beer and then we'll cut them a check as well to kind of flatten that out, so there's no cost for beer for them, but it keeps paper trail, keeps everything, you know, above board, and then, you know, that provides them the opportunity to sell that beer to make, you raise money for what they're doing. That's one of the ways we do it. Is that helpful? Okay.
Hey guys, thank you very much. My name is Damon Arredondo from Glenwood Springs, Colorado. We're a brewery in Plain Air. It's going to be called Unified Brewing Company. We have a couple emphasis. One, sustainability. So I really appreciate especially what you two are both doing. That's great. And then strength and diversity is also another emphasis of ours. We're not in a very diverse area. Western Colorado, in a mountain town, it's two demographics. One, extremely Caucasian, and Hispanic, actually. So one thing that I've seen is people say they're kind of being diverse and doing Mexican beers, but the beers aren't very friendly to that demographic, I want to say. So Mexican lager, great, cool. And then the name really does not include any of those people. It's not, I guess, not specifically made for the Hispanic community, but I think that's a good way that breweries could look at for being a little more inclusive in terms of trying to reach out to those demographics is the brand be a little more welcoming than Mexicali lager or, you know, something like that. But I also appreciate, you know, what you're doing as well, because I've always been a part of diversity certifications and building these types of things at a couple colleges I've been at, too. So I guess one of the questions is, what other things other than, you know, events, what kind of things can we do in terms of our branding and such? Branding is also very general. Packaging and things like that, or create a off-brand that's not specifically tied to our community. One thing I want to do is a Mexican brand or Hispanic brand, but labeled specifically and treated as if it is a Hispanic product, rather than something from what can be perceived as the white, you know, something branded towards white people. Might make people uncomfortable, but that's kind of what, to me, craft brewing tends to be. I see more diversity here, which is nice. But can we create brands that are specifically designed towards that? Do you see any breweries doing that, or is that something that you would like to see more of? Is a brand specifically for that and going away from the general craft beer look, vibe, all that type of stuff? Does that make sense?
Yeah, if I may start, I'll say this. The first time I saw
a black man on a tap handle, it was beautiful. It felt really, really cool to see, I think it was like Brother Leonis or something like that. I can't remember the exact name, but it was Red Brick. And he was a black monk with like a, you know, the old halo kind of, you know what I'm talking about. That felt really, really cool. And the beer was really good. It was a stout. I'm a stout guy. So representation, you know, is important. Where'd you go? There you go. Okay. So representation is cool, and but you got to do it right. Again, you know, one thing that I would suggest this off the bat is who was involved in coming up with the name and the style, right? Did you guys reach out to the people in the community, the creatives, the top? There's a badass Mexican branding dude in your neighborhood. Guaranteed, you know, I promise you, you gotta find these folks. They're there, and if they're not right in your community, they might be, you know, maybe regionally, but that would be the first step, is just try to include folks in the process. You know, have you ever seen Mexicans celebrating Cinco de Mayo?
Yes.
Never. And they never will. You know, they actually hate it, but we enjoy the heck out of it, you know, and that's one of those things. You got to include the people. The people got to be there. And that's why I emphasize who's in the room, because you can have the top, best, coolest, most authentic, badass creatives in the room, and it will add to the conversations, to the mix, and just, you know what I mean? Just make it even more special. So yeah, you want to cater, but you don't want to pander, you know? You want to do something real. So You got to include them in the creative process. You know, have people come in, maybe do like a mini tasting as you guys are deciding which beers to choose, the local publications. You know what I mean? Bring the best journalist in to taste some beer. It's like, hey, help us pick a name for this or something like that. But I don't want to.
Yeah, we could. I want to say it's 420. The importance of that is beyond the is that the session is over at 420. So so that's why that's important.
You thought something else?
So, from Colorado. You guys can continue the conversation afterwards, I think, and one more question.
Okay, it's not really a question. It's more of... So I come from Evanston, Illinois. It's right outside of Chicago. It's a pretty diverse community, probably 50-50, all different. And the one thing that has helped our tap room be very successful is we hired, including myself, I'm the taproom manager, Josh is the owner, and our staff and brewers are all from that community. So when we do events and we name our beers, there's like, we have a beer called Root Down, Beastie Boys. We've had Bismarcky DJ at our place, and we just booked a Rebirth Brass Band, and just all types of different stuff that is related to the people that work there. So they can come up with the events, and it makes everyone feel like very welcome just coming in. Like, oh, I remember this song, or, you know, they just feel welcome because it's people that work there from the community. So hiring within the community is very important, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that takes us back to the hiring stuff, right? Like, you got people, if you're not getting good applicants, like, how can you get a more diverse set of applicants if that's something that you're hoping to wrap into?
Yeah, and the brothers do like the stouts.
Thank you for confirming.
All right, we got one very, very quick question.
Yeah, I'm going to ask it really quick, and maybe I'll take my answer offline or whatever they say. So my name's Melissa. I own a really small nano brewery about 30 minutes west of here in Northern Virginia called Lake Ann Brew House. And I want to just really quickly ask if you would touch base or give a little more insight on what you talked about with charitable contributions, because we've been in business for 1 year. There are days that I get 10 email requests for silent auction fundraiser donations and everything else. We know that we can't legally donate beer. We've had to go as far as donate cash to a business or to a charitable contribution so they can come and buy beer from us so that we can legally give them beer. One thing that we found that was successful for us in this past year is to let our employees be responsible for the decision making. We gave them each a certain amount of money last year, and we told them that they could contribute where they wanted. But beyond that, we do dollar off pint nights where we donate dollars per pint to charitable contributions. We've probably gone against the law and given away tickets for free flights. But what else can we do?
Well, I'm going to let you take that conversation offline so that before people leave, that we can give our panelists a round of applause. And thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, y'all.
Have a great weekend.